Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hey, it's me, Anita Flores. Normally I don't do this, but I am dedicating this new episode of I'm Listening to two special friends. About a week ago, I had to say goodbye to my dog companion. His name was Tucker, and I met him through my roommate, Jenna, and this was my first dog friend. You know, we got to know each other, through about 3 years of living together, and honestly, living with a dog truly changed my life. They just are always there in a good way, and they never give their opinions, and you can talk in front of them and cry in front of them and just be your general self in front of them, and all they want in return is your love and affection. It's a pretty great relationship. So boy, do I miss him a lot. I'm kind of glad we never had to, when Frasier was on, I'm glad we never got to see what life was like, for Martin without Eddie. I really feel like, well, I know that my roommate definitely lost her Eddie. She lost her Eddie this month. And I don't know what my equivalent is. I guess in this analogy, I am Frasier losing Eddie, because as much as Frasier, makes it seem like Eddie is his arch dog enemy, I know that he loved Eddie. I more openly loved Tucker. We never had a frenemy thing. We were always friends. He was with me when I had to have major surgery, and I was home recovering for about 10 weeks. You know, he watched TV. He watched Frasier with me. I think he liked it. So I would like to dedicate this episode to my dog friend Tucker and my roommate friend Jenna. And if you would like to contribute to a GoFundMe, there's a GoFundMe for all of Tucker's medical bills. Jenna really did everything she could for Tucker to keep him alive, but, you know, at a certain point, I think she realized it was better for him to not be in pain anymore. And but now she's got, you know, a mountain of vet bills. So I'm going to throw up a link somewhere, probably on my Instagram and or Twitter after this episode airs. And if you can donate even the teeniest amount, it would be much appreciated. Well, enjoy the show, and hold your pet companions tight. They really and truly are wonderful. at this moment in time, I'm giving a super shout out to dogs. They are truly lovely, wonderful companions, and I think you should pet a nice dog today. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to I'm Listening. This is the Frasier fan podcast where we discuss everything imaginable about the show Frasier. So today is a special episode, and I'm going to start it off a little bit differently than I usually do, because this episode and the guest that I have on has to do with a very special tweet that I saw on February 21st, 2018. And this tweet said the following: "We did predictive text again, and this time, it's Frasier." I still don't fully understand what predictive text is, but we're going to talk all about it today with our very special guest. So let's welcome comedian and writer Nat Towson and writer Amy Barnes to the show. I have these two very special guests today because they were both involved in writing this predictive text script. Nat, would you call it, is that what you would call this, a predictive text script?
Yeah, sort of. It's definitely a screenplay, and we used predictive text to write it. I think that the one detail that I would make sure you understand is that it's not written by an algorithm or a program. It's written by people using algorithms and programs, so there's still a person steering.
Got it. All right. So this is good intel to have before. I think we should just read the script. It's very short, everybody, but I would like you all to appreciate and understand what we're talking about. So Amy and Nat, if you would do me the pleasure, I pre-wrote down what roles we could each play.
Okay.
So I obviously want to be Frasier, and I can do stage direction. Nat, if you could be Niles and Daphne, and Amy, if you could be Roz and Martin, that would be much appreciated. Okay. So let's read the script. Okay. And I'm going to include myself in this. I don't do impressions. I don't expect anyone here to get into character. Just no pressure. Okay. Interior, Frasier's supposedly worthwhile living room, midnight, Guatemalan time. Frasier enters wearing his pondering suit. He laughs triumphantly into the corridor. Frasier exits. Martin and Eddie arrive at the apartment. They both rush into the kitchen. As they wrestle over a half-eaten donut, the camera pans over to Frasier in his bedroom, holding his ear to the wall. I'm listening. The phone rings. Frasier returns to the living room and answers it. He looks confused. I'm sorry, this isn't Edward's fashions. Yes, I'm sure it is not. I'm a psychiatrist with a woman interest who's a bit of a pretentious sociopath. Frasier hangs up the phone and looks at it with disgust. Martin triumphantly staggers out of the kitchen.
Who is there?
It was a mistake. They said they were trying to find some place to buy English boys' pants.
Well, that's fine. There isn't anything complicated about that. It's just a little misunderstanding.
This is the ultimate offense to my dignity. Niles enters, slightly smooths his hair, and looks at Frasier expectantly.
Frasier, I don't want to impose, but Maris is quite keen on your eyes. I have to take your eyes, or else she'd said she'd take mine. Frasier, I need eyes. You do your work on the phone, so you don't.
No, Niles. I bought this apartment for the view of the Space Needle. Although I'm very disappointed, I can't touch it from here. Frasier holds his arm out towards the skyline and starts weeping softly.
I would like chili for dinner.
Over Niles' dead body.
Just pour the chili on me. That should do the trick.
If we pour the chili on dead Niles, can I still have some?
Dad! Martin produces an enormous cut of meat.
This big ham is my favorite son. You guys are too fancy and bad.
Interior, Daphne's canopy bed, at night. Daphne is lying on the bed, asleep and shivering. She turns and mouths, Frasier, to the camera, still entirely asleep. Begin dream sequence. Interior, Frasier's living room, 6 years after Cheers. Daphne is folding Martin, even though he has obviously not been ironed. She looks down at him for a long beat, then notices Frasier staring at them. You don't know how to iron, my dad? Frasier gasps twice.
It's no problem. I didn't want you to make me a nice, smooth guy, so that's fine.
Martin rolls himself up and puts himself behind the counter. End of dream sequence. Interior, Daphne's canopy bed, morning. Daphne wakes up laughing and sweating.
Oh, Daphne Moon, No sprinkler system can ever put out the fire in your head.
Interior, Cafe Nervosa. When Fraser is there, everyone in Cafe Nervosa covers their ears as the man who swallowed spiders once again proves himself a braggart. Oh, come on. He's average. I'm the one who might own Rembrandt's.
You know what, Fraser? Fancy espresso and a proudly difficult disposition aren't the same thing as being happy.
Roz, you've been with a man a minute for a while. You know Ned and his little toes. You just get into bed with any outdoorsman in your community.
I'm giving advice that you could use, Fraser, and you just called me a slut to shut me down.
Haven't you ever seen the show? That is exactly what I do on Fraser. Interior, Fraser's living room. Niles' birthday, but nobody notices. Martin rolls open the window and gently sticks his head out of it. Also, Fraser is there.
You think I was afraid of that damn painting? I wasn't afraid. I thought you were my son, Fraser.
I fancy.
Isn't proper grammar I am fancy?
How dare you? He isn't even wearing his fancy shirt today.
Daphne enters carrying a cake. She places the cake on the balcony and throws it over the rail.
Well, Dad, you never thanked Maris for the dinner that you were not at. It's all very complicated, but she's stuffed in the kitchen drawer now.
She'll have too much room in there. Better to put her in a box for matches. No need to take the matches out.
It's a good thing there is no spark between you. The phone rings. Fraser answers the phone. He laughs angrily. He hangs up the phone. Interior, Fraser's living room. Closing credits. Toss salad and scrambled egg, please. Fraser sits by the phone, his eyes wide with paranoid fear. Behind him, Eddie stares just as intently at Fraser. Martin enters and shows Eddie his leash. Eddie barks, causing Fraser to jump into the ceiling. He is dead. Daphne takes the iron out of the refrigerator and touches it to her forehead. Fade out. And scene. Incredible work, everybody. Now, the only reason I wasn't laughing through that whole thing is because I've read this so many times. Okay. And when the first time I read it, I was at work, and I every few lines I kept going, oh my God, oh my God. And I feel like that was the reaction of a Fraser fan, because it was like beyond laughing. It was more of like, this feels so real. So good work, everybody. I have many follow-up questions. And I'm not sure who is, well, no, yeah, let's go with both of you. But yeah, Amy, what is predictive script? And I'm curious, what was your part in all of this?
Well, this was one of the first things that I did with them. I was not there for like some of the earlier ones, like the Harry Potter that came before this. And the process is they kind of ask, who knows this TV show, kind of virtually raise your hand. And so we work on these, and the beginning process is that someone has pulled that script, all of the Fraser scripts, and put it into the format which we used, which is the Wodehouse. I guess I've never said that out loud. I'm in Tennessee, Wodehouse. So I'm not with, I'm separated, but it is Wodehouse, correct? Is that how you say it out loud?
Wodehouse.
Where are we?
It's like the P.G. Wodehouse, the British author. So it's pronounced Wodehouse.
Wodehouse. So I have been pronouncing it incorrectly, yeah. Far away from everyone else in my head. So,
yeah, we all communicate online. So it's.
So we're in a Slack. We're actually in a Slack, and we meet once a week and discuss these and set up what we're going to work on. So within that, we take all of those scripts and use the keyboards that are within that, which are all of the script words and the directions. I think on this one, did we have a separate one for stage directions and then for each character as well? I can't remember how it was.
Yeah, so what we essentially do is we sort of parse these scripts. We took a ton of different Fraser episodes that I was able to find online, and then we split them up by every character had their own. Basically, you make a text file from every character's dialogue, and then another one from the direction, from the action or stage direction, whatever you want to call it. And then we use these to we load them into this software that is Botnick's sort of signature tool, which is called VoiceBox. And the way that VoiceBox works is it's very similar to the predictive word suggestions in a text messaging app. Like it says, like, you know, if you start writing a text like, I have to go. And, you know, it'll suggest to, like, I have to go to something. I have to go home will be the next suggestion. I have to go away. Oh. And that's based on average text messages. But the more you use it, it's actually being trained. That algorithm that's predicting what word you're going to use next is being trained on your text messages. So it's looking at it and it's going, what would Anita most likely, what word would you most likely use based on your previous texts. And if you have like Google and a Google keyboard, it's recording a lot more of what you type than you may realize. But it's being trained on everything that you write. So side note, check your permissions. But our software works differently. Whereas instead of being trained on something that you wrote, you can take it and you can point it at any corpus of text, which corpus meaning just an amount of text.
Uh-huh.
And so essentially what we're able to do is by creating these different files of dialogue for different character, we're able to create a predictive text keyboard that predicts what Fraser would most likely say next, what Niles would most likely say next. And it's really only basing it on the last three words in the sentence. So it's not even going to spit out perfect syntax if you just keep taking the first suggestion. So what's good about that? I mean, it's limited. There is software that exists that's, you know, there are neural networks, which we use for other projects and stuff sometimes, but there do exist algorithms and software which can create full syntactic sentences. But the whole point is that it's not automated. It's a human steering. So it's sort of we think of it as collaboration.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to kind of use this to shape sentences. But you get these sort of patterns of, because you have this three-step predictive or three-word memory predictive text situation, it will give you these like strings of words. And what's fun about that is that you see these patterns recurring as you try to write with it. And you realize like, oh, Fraser does use that turn of phrase a lot, or that sentence structure a lot, and that kind of allows you, it sort of surfaces these trends in the thing that you're parodying, and allows you to sort of rise to the bring them to the surface, and sort of it allows you to isolate these trends and then sort of amplify them. And so I think it really lends itself to writing parody, because it isolates all these little turns of phrase and stuff that you might not normally notice about this thing that you've watched so much of, but then when you see it pulled up or slightly heightened, you realize, oh yeah, that is extremely Fraser. That is extremely Roz.
Right. So does that mean, I mean, obviously, so there's that element, and then there's the human actual people element. So does that mean, like, okay, one line from this script, for example, from Martin, I would like chili for dinner. So is it like something the software spit out X words and then you sort of shaped it?
Yes. So you have, well, not exactly. You have, you know, much like on your phone, you have three word suggestions. We have a list of about, I mean, you can choose how many you want, but I usually work with 21 suggestions, or 28 rather. So it's a grid of the 28 most likely words to come next. And so I was probably on that grid. Someone clicked it, could easily follow I in a sentence. So someone clicked that. Mm-hmm. I would like, that's a very common. And so then those are three words, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently in the Martin keyboard, one of the words suggested, if you type I would like, that's one of the 28 most likely words to follow I would like, is chili. It's in at least more than one script. So that came up. So someone showed chili. So then at that point, you know, it suggests chili for dinner. You know, so it figured that out. Those are not always the first suggestion, but someone is navigating through. They probably picked the first most likely, the seventh most likely suggestion. But those words are all in Martin's dialogue somewhere. And so the algorithm has gone and looked and said, after this, he's most likely to use these words. And then some writer thought that that was funny and found a way to make that sentence.
Well, I think like that one, it was like, I would like. And so I think that was one of the ones that I think as we moved through that. But I think it was like chili or raincoat, or there was some random things. And so as we wrote this, some of it we did a little bit more collaborative, where we would say, okay, what would Martin say if we're doing this specific setting? So some of that was a little dictated. If it was, I would like chili for dinner, I think we maybe at that point had written a lot of the script, and we had sat back down and said, okay, these are the scenes we have, they're doing these certain things. And so that one made sense, in air quotes, more than some of the other ones. I mean, and then it followed in.
Yeah, there's actually, oh, sorry, go ahead. There's actually a line, and I'm noticing this in revisiting this project. I'm kind of glad we did. So we have this, I can describe our whole writing process start to finish if that would help, but we have this voting system where we vote on some of our favorite lines. We basically write without a narrative in mind.
Okay.
The top voted line, I realized, got cut from the final script, unfortunately, that Amy wrote, and it's two lines of dialogue that I love so much. I can't believe this didn't make it into the final script. I forgot about this, which is just Martin says, I would like this chair to be my grave. And Frasier responds, it is obviously full of enough dirt for that.
Actually,
which is such like a good, slightly wrong Frasier joke. But yeah, Amy wrote that. And
Amy, that is a great
there's
line.
There's actually a very good reason why that was cut. This has been a while. You have to realize February to now.
Oh.
We actually cut that because John Mahoney died like 2 weeks before we did this.
Oh,
so we thought that
I
was,
forgot about
we
that.
We did go back and revisit that. So that got cut. And then there was another reference to the grave at the end. So we actually changed the ending slightly because we rewrote something in those last three lines between Miles Martin and Frasier, but we had to cut that first line. But it was part of that chili section. And
yes, I forgot about that because we all even delayed the release of the piece because it was the week that John Mahoney died, and we just didn't want to like be like, and now here's a wacky version of this guy who we actually care about.
One of the funny things on Facebook was that chili line, and I think that Nikki might have said something about this. One of our other writing people, someone came onto the social
our
media,
managing editor, in fact,
and there was a big joke where he put on there, pour some chili on me, like the I think it's a Poison song. Pour some sugar on me.
Yeah, pour some sugar on me.
So there was a reference to that. So it actually worked, but we knew that some of that line was missing. And we've had other processes where within these scripts or within the projects, we've had some projects offered us. And there's some things where we do as a group, and we did get to group together as a group and say, is this respectful? Is this too much over the line? And we've done that several times where there's kind of a collaborative, we meet back up in Slack and say, okay, he just died. We can maybe say if I pour some chili on dead Niles, that's okay. But if we say, your chair is your grave.
Also, Frasier can die in the...
That was a little bit over the line.
Whatever you call the sting of the... Yeah.
So we are careful. Sorry. I think we're very careful and as respectful. And that doesn't happen very often, but I think there's been a few other occasions where we've gone back in and rewritten to make sure that
I think you made the right call.
It was still fun.
Yeah, I think in general, we're parodying things that we love. Yeah. Like you wouldn't, you know, I sat out, for example, the Scrubs parody, which got pretty successful because I didn't watch Scrubs. Yeah, we had a Game of Thrones parody. It, like, you know, I really have no input to something like that because I think anyone can write absurd, funny lines using this process, which is fun. But and it's fun to create weird nonsense that way. But generally for these parodies that we're writing, it's much more powerful or useful if the person has a deep love of the source material, because then the patterns that they sort of subconsciously have always been recognizing in the source material that sort of get teased out through this process, you'll have that recognition. Whereas, you know, if I were doing the Scrubs keyboard, I'm just going, oh, that's a funny sentence, but it doesn't reflect anything of the character. And I'm not imagining the actor saying it. You know, it's more important that you have, I think, you know, there's a lot of like internet shitpost culture and like, you know, deconstructing generally beloved source material of people just with the sort of like nihilistic, like, look how much I destroyed this thing. And like, there's value to destroying something beautiful. But I think that our process is a lot more reverent. We're only parodying things that we have at least some degree of love for the most part.
Yeah. Like for me as a person who has a podcast about Frasier, like
do you watch the show?
Yeah. I've seen the show. Every line,
what channel is it on?
Every line felt like it had received the attention of a person who understood that show very deeply. So, I'm curious. Number one, this is my number one question because I love that line. Do you have this? Like, do you have a list of like cut lines?
I have a list of every line submitted.
Oh my god.
That was the number one. I'm glad that we actually get to do. I would love. Maybe we have to start like a Botnik podcast where we go behind the scenes. But I love that actually getting to talk because so much good material gets cut for every. I was saying this to Anita before we turned the mics on, but I usually turn in a piece, and the number one piece of feedback I get is this is funny and it's too long, and so I usually end up cutting at least a page from everything we release.
Why don't we call this? I want to make up a segment right now called "Too Hot for Botnik."
Too hot.
And I would love since you have it in front of you, Nat, I'd love to hear a few of some cut lines that were really, really good.
Sure, Amy, if you want to pull up the Woodhouse as well, I'm gonna. Going to praise Amy here again because she writes some of the best. I mean, this I've had Amy as a writer on a number of projects that I've run, and she has some of the. I mean, we have a lot of good writers, but she has some of the top quality submissions that don't always make it in. I would say a lot of this script is hers, but here's another one that didn't make it in by Amy. which is, I have a deep love of prunes and cranes, but not cranes that eat prunes. We just didn't find a place for it, but I love that one.
Well, and you do, I do have to say that the editing, though, is a big part of it, because you do have to look through. I mean, I don't know how many lines are on here, but this one was one that, because there are so many characters.
Dozens.
He probably had to edit it down, even from that initial list. There were so many awesome lines.
Sorry.
So the editing is awesome, too. You have to give credit to the editing, because... But the Guatemala.
I'm going
to
give some credit to you, too, Amy.
I'm just laughing. I read another. I think Amy wrote, I think this is a Niles line, and it's just, seriously, Frasier, did you have to attack my hawk with a sword?
Which I could picture.
Or with your sword,
I was actually picturing him in Frasier's apartment attacking the...
Yeah, with a hawk, and Frasier's got, like, a broad sword. Yeah, that...
I think I just want to hear Amy lines.
Oh, no. Well, there's an interesting one in here. Some of the most very simple ones. There is the interior Frasier's kitchen, midnight Guatemalan time. And that one may have actually made it. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
But I love that one, because just the simplicity of why is it midnight Guatemalan time? And you have to think about it.
Yeah, it was really fun. I was going to say one of the most fun things to write in this script was we had to have a bunch of scene headers. And in, you know, if you're not familiar with screenplay format, you write interior, exterior, and then you write, you know, usually a very brief description of where they are, you know, kitchen, something, and then hyphen or M dash technically.
Well, and I think there were some funny Daphne lines.
Then the time.
Some funny Daphne lines that got cut from the bedroom scene, because even we were a little confused as we were writing.
Oh, it was, there was the dream sequence was way longer originally. There was a whole thing with her trying to iron Martin and folding him up and rolling him up, and Frasier saying, you don't know how to iron my dad. And she's like crying. And he was like, I thought somehow that I had, you know, you find that special person that can iron your father or something like that. And he's like, I thought that might be you, Daphne, but please don't. He's like, I don't mind, but please don't come in tomorrow or something. There's a whole long sequence where Daphne was like weeping at her inability to make Martin less wrinkly.
Yeah.
And that was like half a page, and I think at some point it was hard to visualize already. I think that's one thing, if we mess with the reality too much, mm-hmm. you're already forcing people to like strain and picture this thing. So if you get too deep into a dream sequence, it kind of breaks. I think there's like a sort of base reality to this humor, and mm-hmm. and we're relying on the fact that like everyone knows what the Frasier set, or anyone who watches Frasier mm-hmm. creates this reality in their brain, right? And so I think that what's fun about this is like, if you're familiar with the show and you read this script, not my crappy Niles impression, if you read it in your head, you'll hear
Absolutely.
Your version of all the characters. You'll see it in the set. So it actually like kind of creates the parody for you. Whereas if we were to like shoot this with actors pretending to be them, it wouldn't be nearly as good. So I think the thing about the dream sequence, which is as funny and absurd as it was harder to picture because it was so far out of the reality of Frasier that it wasn't really reading like a funny parody like the rest of this stuff was. So
involved.
It got drastically
There was a bag
down.
Of beans involved.
There were what?
There was a bag of beans involved.
Oh, yeah, Daphne had a bag of beans.
I found the line down here. And for some reason, she's picking up a bag of beans and ironing Martin. And both parts were funny, but we eliminated the beans because we just couldn't. It was probably like 11
just
o'clock
much,
on a
yeah.
Sunday night, and we couldn't figure out the beans and the ironing.
Yeah, and I noticed that there is still that remainder, which I love in the sting at the end, where Daphne, when she's awake, tries pressing the iron to her face just to see.
Like, well, after I read that line, I actually wrote down the thing that, like, I loved the script, but I noticed, I was like, there's a few things that make this pretty dark, and I was curious, like, mm-hmm. so, like, for example, Daphne whispering Frasier to camera, stuffing Maris in a drawer. Frasier dies. Daphne touches an iron to her forehead. So I'm curious. Those were some, and I loved it, but those were some dark choices.
The iron to the forehead part was actually, it sounds worse. It was supposed to be a light, like the iron is off, and she had this dream about ironing a person, and she's still not sure it was a dream. So she's like testing the iron.
Oh, in my head.
That may not have come through.
In my head, she was putting a hot iron to her face.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe it's hot, but the idea was that it was supposed to be, she's like still not 100% sure, left over from the dream, if it was a dream. You know, someone, because I read, if you tweet at Botnick Studios, I will probably read it. I probably shouldn't reveal that, but I respond too much on social media, and I respond to people, especially who ask about how we make stuff, because I think our process is a little opaque sometimes, but I think it's interesting. And someone reached out. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but they said there was a thread that they tagged me and be like, hey, maybe Nat Tasman can comment on this. And they were talking about why Frasier lends itself so well to surrealism. Like they were loving all these weird moments about Frasier gets stuck in the ceiling and dies and stuff like why does that sort of, and they're like, you know, why is Frasier good for that? And the answer I gave was something like, there's a rigidity, there's like a dual layer rigidity to Frasier, which is that it's about this world in which there are these, you know, Frasier and Niles are from this structured society where they have these standards, and a lot of the humor within the show comes from the conflict between that and like their dad or the world outside of them, or them being like, no, this is proper, this is the way things ought to be, and they have these like deeply held beliefs, and depending on how you feel about it, they're either totally pompous and demonstrative, or that they really philosophically believe that these things are important and then let their egos get the best of them. But regardless, a lot of that tension in the show comes from, or a lot of the humor in the show comes from, the tension between the sort of rigidity of the world that they grew up in or choose to participate in and the world around them. And then you have the external rigidity, which is the 1990s sitcom format, right? Like it's the show itself has to have the exact same plot structure. You know, it's A plot for the first 7 minutes and then the B plot for two. And then they come back and, there's, you know, the cold open and the sting. And so there's like this dual layer of structure that they're sort of being confronted with. So I believe what I said was this sort of multi-tier rigidity to the world of Frasier really lends itself to the sweet torment of manipulation. Yeah. When you start to break that reality, it really,
I would agree,
elicits,
I think, yeah, getting weird with Frasier works. I mean, I would say like right now I still feel like there's I just found a new Frasier, like weird Frasier Twitter account, but like there's at least 2 to 3 of Seinfeld, and I feel like it started there, and I feel like it's trickling down.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Now, you
well,
know,
there's the modern Frasier. Seinfeld, and then Seinfeld 2000, which is like the more absurd version. But yeah, I think everyone's kind of copying that.
So it was so weird. So this fits perfectly to me for what I am calling weird Frasier. So Nat, obviously,
I was just gonna say, like, I think it's like it would, for example, to like close that, finish that thought, or kind of create a counterpoint. Like, I don't think it's interesting to parody The Simpsons. I know a lot of people love to like, I made this weird GIF out of The Simpsons, or, you know, like I re-edited The Simpsons screenshot or whatever. Anything can happen on The Simpsons.
Sure.
So it's not interesting to me when you're like, whoa, look, Bart's upside down. Like, yeah, they did something crazier than that 20 years before, like the current season, you know.
Right.
But with Frasier, I think it's a little different because rarely, in fact, I remember like they rarely go to close up. They rarely break, like, the look of the show is so rigid that
like
if
they
when there's a new set, you go, oh my god, like, what's, you know, they're at a store all of a sudden.
Absolutely.
So it's a lot more structured.
Well, and
I
will say that we are a little, for some reason, Botnick, we followed this up with Star Trek like shortly after that, I think, or shortly before, and the whole falling out of
the Next Generation,
falling out of the ceiling, we actually had that somebody threw Jell-O over something and fell out of a ceiling, and that it also worked in Star Trek. So it's interesting, in a different format with a different narrative with it, that came up again. The text actually brought that up again, and it was different, but there was a similar thing where someone falls out of the ceiling in khaki pants and there's green Jell-O that goes over a wall.
Right, I remember that.
And it was interesting.
Not only that, but there's a lot of like, the character screams and screams and screams and dies or something like that. Like we have to avoid getting too morbid because I feel like it naturally kind of leads itself, because we want to sort of torment. We want to kind of like twist, like, we have the, like, these characters are real in some narrative
and
sense,
we want
right?
to kill them all.
Well, really though, like, they have power. Like, I mean, if you want to get really philosophical about it, like, people, you could make the argument that a character that was on television for 11 years has power. It like exists as an entity outside of Kelsey Grammer, outside of a script, outside of paper, outside of text. Like, the character Frasier exists on some narrative and meta narrative level. So the thing that we're interacting with is not the Frasier script. It's not Kelsey Grammer himself. It's this almost social concept that is the character Frasier. And so I think that we naturally want to torture him sometimes.
Yeah, I don't mind when bad things happen to Frasier because it's comical. What I was going to ask is, I mean, Amy, I definitely spoke to Nat about the fact that he definitely is a Frasier fan, but I'm curious, are you also,
I am, and I'm
a Craniac?
I do, and I had not watched it as much in the initial, like when it was out originally, but watched it more when it was in syndication, went back through and probably did the version of binge watching, because I think it was on like 5 nights a week or something, and went back through, because I think you get a little bit more of the context of it. And I think it was actually back on, I think I went back and watched some episodes. It had popped back up on TV in syndication, like on some random channel, and went back and watched it again. Because I think when you watch it and you're like waiting for an episode each week, you remember it, mm-hmm. but I think there's a distance between it. So I actually had gone back. I've watched it probably more in a row in syndication later on, but definitely, yes, I am. And I think that there's something about the fact that, like what he pointed out with the Simpsons, is that there is a place for this, because even though it's a little offbeat, probably, it is still in Seattle. We still mention certain things. And so I think that's what keeps it on track, is those are the things that are recognizable. You know, it's Seattle, you know, it's where they are. And we had some lines that came up looking back at this that you can tell someone who maybe was writing this and maybe didn't know it quite as well. There's some things that are kind of jarring when you see them that you just can't make fit. So I think that's the credit to the editor that really has to know that show even better, to go back in and say, this line really is jarring. Even in this format, we can't write it like that. So it's interesting to see
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I think you go through sometimes and just go, well, this is a very funny line, but it breaks the reality too much, or it just doesn't have enough grounding in the narrative, the overall Frasier narrative, that like, it was like, you know, it's like we were just saying, like, you have to have, like you said, like, it's Seattle, it's Frasier's apartment. Like, you have to have it, make it feel real enough so that the unusual details stand out still. If it becomes completely absurd, then it's just the names of the characters that you're putting in there, but not, it doesn't have enough of the sitcom reality.
And I think that's what Botnick does well, is edit that to the point where it makes more sense like that. In quotations.
Since you guys are reading this over and over, like, I mean, do you feel like even now when you look at it, you're like, this line is crazy? Because I could, I could tell you.
Well, it is funny because we write a lot of stuff, and maybe if, I don't know if you want to. I feel like I should explain the writing process from start to finish, because it's a little, the way we just dove in, it's a little arcane the way that we write, but. We write a lot of stuff, and it's written by so many writers that, like, going back and reading this, there were lines I forgot about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have multiple projects going at a time constantly, so it's very easy to forget what we did last week, let alone months ago. But yeah, I mean, I think because the process, the generation process, is so distributed and sort of decentralized, and then also because so much of what we write is so absurd that it. Yeah, I mean, it's nice because I can become sort of re-delighted or re-amused by some of these lines where I go back and I'm like, whoa, what was that? I did not remember that sentence at all.
Do you have a list of, because you said that each character has their own keyboard. So does that mean you've got lists, like, for example, for Daphne, where it's like a list of like 3 words at a time? Like, what does that look like? For each person. The reason I ask is because I want to hear what I'm curious about is I'm curious about what words or like small phrases came up the most for like certain characters.
So there are, I mean, you can run an analysis on a corpus of text and ask for like, what's like a 5 gram or something, which is like 5 words in a row that the words that come like in order most frequently. But most of what we're doing is looking at a list of words. We're not looking at a sequence. So you're looking at like, if I've typed in like I would like, which is the example we gave before, you'll get 16 or so suggestions as to the word that's most likely to come next.
Mm-hmm.
It's you don't see the word that's most likely to come after that or after that. It's word by word writing process. So essentially what we do is we create these predictive text keyboards depending on how detailed we want to get. Usually we give every character a keyboard and it suggests what that character is most likely to say next, given the words that are already typed into the text field. Right. Much like the text messaging app suggests, regardless how much you've typed, what your next word is most likely to be, and then what the word after that's most likely to be when you select one, on and on. And so what we do is we separate them. So, you know, if I'm writing, mm-hmm. I usually have multiple browser tabs open,
mm-hmm.
and I'll have Frasier, I'll have Niles, I'll have stage direction, and you can also combine sources. So I can, you know, we've done a lot of stuff where it's, you know, Frasier, you know, something meets something completely different. In this case, though, we isolate them. So mm-hmm. isolated by character, I've got all these keyboards open,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a canvas, which is essentially a Google Doc, right? And what I'm doing is I'm trying to come up with lines for these characters. And the way that we start is that, you know, so I was the, I don't know, head writer, editor on mm-hmm. this project. the way I started was finding a bunch of Frasier scripts, giving them to one of our developers, asking him to split them up by character because it's easier than doing it manually, to do it algorithmically. Mm-hmm. And then basically you just upload a text file into VoiceBox, which is our tool. If you at home want to try it, it's completely available. It's open source. It's apps.botnik.org/writer. Mm-hmm. And you can upload any text file to there, up to 4 megabytes, and it will run like a .txt file. It will run the analysis on it and then quickly produce a predictive text keyboard. So you can put anything in there. You can put your own emails in there, whatever you want. We do it by character. And then, so I created all these keyboards. Mm-hmm. And then we use this tool called Woodhouse, which is just an internal little HTML website that we built. It's a voting tool. Mm-hmm. You can upload any amount of copy. It can be a sentence. It can be paragraphs. And then anyone can upvote it in the group. And so it's just a way of sort of like finding the lines, because you can search by author, which is how I found a bunch of Amy's stuff just now. Nice. You can search by the newest, but you can also search by the highest voted. So it's a big repository. And so I created all these keyboards, and then sometimes we have small groups. This was, I think, anyone who likes Frasier, you're welcome to participate in what we call a writing jam. Right. And so I send out all these keyboards, and everyone, you know, our team is distributed. So they're all across, I was gonna say all across the country. They're all across the world.
Is this the first time you guys are talking on the phone?
Yes, we've never spoken on the phone before. Hi, Amy.
Amazing.
I've only talked to you about the three of you, and that was just the call map. We did some of the call map, and I think I talked to two people on that, but that's the only time.
Yeah, this is a tangent, but we have been gradually, you know, I was working with our managing editor, Nikki Martin, and then he came to New York a few months ago. And so we met for the first time in New York, and Botnik has large clusters, I would say, in Seattle, Chicago, New York. I think there's some in the Bay Area. There's a couple of people in LA as well. Mm-hmm. We have running live shows in multiple cities, and a lot of us travel. And Jamie Brew, our CEO, has been touring right now, and our CTO, Elle O'Brien, was touring with Pop Magazine. Mm-hmm. So she came through all these different cities presenting Botnik. So we're a team of people who were sort of recruited online. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. We are a team of people who were recruited online through a series of connections, but everyone has some connection to the CEO or to one of the people there, but we don't all know each other. And it's been interesting because we're all gradually getting to know each other.
I'll tell you what I'd love to do. What to do with what you just said. But Amy, you had mentioned to me via like Facebook message a long time ago that there have been like collaborations on like live events with. And so like in my head, I'm like, man, how cool would it be if there was an entire like, you know, full 25 minute script, predictive script of Frasier, and then we could like put it on as a play. Mm-hmm. That's a dream of mine that I just came up with. So I don't know what it would take to do
well,
that.
Well, it is funny because whenever we release, like when we released possibly our I think most popular piece was we put out this, we called it a new chapter of Harry Potter. It was called Harry Potter and the Portrait of what appeared to be, or of what looked like a large pile of ash. And that was the name of the book I put in heavy quotes was that. And then we mocked it up in Photoshop to look like pages from a book. Like there's like a hand holding the book. Now, if you looked at it at all, you would see that the book cover was just the Order of the Phoenix book cover. I think it was one of the covers. I forget which one that we just changed the text on. There wasn't even original art.
Wow.
We just used the fonts. And so many of the comments that we got were,
write the whole thing.
Where can I buy? No, not why. Yes, there was that, but also where can I buy this? Where is the book? When is the book coming out? Give us money. We'll take our money. We will sell that. To the point where we got a phone call from J.K. Rowling's lawyers, like, you're not selling this book, are you? And we're like, it's not real. It's not real.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a wild week.
Sounds very wild. Oh, I meant to ask. So it sounds like this was a very long process.
I'm sorry. I didn't finish. No, I give you the bullet point version? I realized I got off.
I mean, well, it was already pretty long.
That's why I
everything
realized
you just said. So, but I am curious.
It's a complicated process.
How long did it take from start to finish this entire process to getting this actual script out?
Probably like 2 weeks, I think.
Oh,
maybe three.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, we're doing a lot of projects simultaneously. So it's like, I'm editing this, so we all write copy separately with no idea of a narrative in mind. We all pitch it in this tool called Woodhouse. Everyone votes on it. I go and look. I usually pull the top 10 or 20 most popular quotes. Ones that don't get a lot of votes sometimes make it in. Otherwise, it's just a good way of surfacing, like, these are the funniest lines. We're usually chatting in Slack, which is a like a multi-channel Slack.
Oh, I know
app.
Slack.
It's for your listeners who might not be part of a tech company.
Every Sunday night we write.
We're chatting about tone and stuff like that. And then my job as the editor is to go, and I'm looking at like trends in this. I'm like, well, they talk a lot about, oh, these two lines could go together. And so some of these scenes where it seems like people are talking to each other, those lines were written by different people on different mm-hmm. days. And so then I go in and I build a narrative out of it. And then we have often the second phase that we call a targeted jam, where I go like, hey, there's no scene header here. Like you were saying, the Midnight Guatemalan time, like we brainstormed a bunch of those one day, and that was really fun to write. Or like, hey, I'll just be like, to get from A to B here, like I need either Frasier entering, but instead of just saying Frasier enters, I want someone to find a funny way of saying that.
Sure.
But I'll make someone else do it because I'm being too predictive or prescriptive rather at this point. And then, or like, I need Frasier. There's a line where it had to establish, I remember specifically, Frasier being pompous. And because there, I had written the line, you know what, Frasier, fancy espresso and a proudly difficult disposition aren't the same thing as being happy. And I was like, she needs to be reacting to something like that. And so it was like, okay, Frasier. And we had the line also about him, the man who once swallowed spiders, once again proves himself to be a braggart. Like, I like that reference to there was something like Frasier had was a braggart, even though he had unwittingly swallowed spiders once. But we had to have him proving himself to be a braggart. So mm-hmm. That was like one of the prompts. And a bunch of people wrote Frasier dialogue where it was mm-hmm. like the only thing they had to say was that Frasier has to prove himself to be pompous and unself-aware. And the winning one was, I think, by Michael Goodman. Oh, come on, he's average. I'm the one who might own Rembrandts. So that was like a patch that was filled in. That's one of the last things that we wrote.
Sure.
And you fill in all the gaps, and then you go, it's too long, and then you cut it down, and then you rewrite. And we're always rewriting in the predictive mm-hmm. tool. So it's a long and arduous
kind of
process to writing, but it allows us to write without any real constraints because there's no narrative. You can write any absurd thing you're thinking of.
I liked his pondering suit. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, and I think that what he's talking about, I mean, I think everyone that works on these has some role, usually is comedian/writer. I just live in a state that there's not a lot of comedians. But the writing of that, instead of just saying, Frasier has Rembrandt, I think the script format, it needed to be in this format because of that typical writer's phrase of show, don't tell. So we needed to show mm-hmm. that. And so I think that writer side of things, I think, comes into play. The people that write for this, I think, are really good writers, too. A lot of them have written Matt has written for some pretty awesome sites. And I think that comes into play. If you can't write that, and if you look at some other versions like this, you can tell when maybe it's a really funny person writing, but the mm-hmm. writing is not as much of that. I think there has to be that duality there. Even if they're a comedy writer, if they haven't written for other things as a real writer, there's a double purpose mm-hmm. with that, where you have to know show, don't tell, and you have to know how to do this dialogue in a way that's not plotting mm-hmm. or boring. And I think that a lot of that comes into play.
Yeah, to some degree, you have to understand sitcom format or screenplay or not just format, but like you said, you have to understand how to be a good writer, because not everything is going to be deconstructed and absurd. Like, you have to actually convey information in an artful way.
And I was looking at Daphne's keyboard. And so to give you an indication of Daphne's keyboard, I typed I in the big, long, there's like a black space.
The text field, yeah.
Within that keyboard, we may have had those five people, but the words that were available to them kind of dictated how much they said in the script. Because if you look in the script, you can see where the secondary characters have less dialogue. I mean, there's within the show. So it guides that, because they're going to come up with mm-hmm. more interesting things to say. But if you type in I for Daphne, you get itself, impressed, imagination, Irene, imaginary, important, idiot, innocently. So you get some guidance. So you know already that Daphne is portrayed as being kind of innocent, but innocently comes up. So if you know her, then you automatically get this adverb that's going to describe what she's doing. So it gives you some of
absolutely.
That, where it kind of guides. She has a big imagination. She's innocent. She's inviting. I don't remember who Irene is. I'm not sure why that came up, but I know there's probably a character.
A name that was said in one episode, yeah.
It was said in one episode.
Because you're not searching by the most likely word. You're searching by words starting with I.
Yeah. So if you were just saying like the
so
I would
So it's just
like,
in there somewhere.
If you like put that in and that's what your starting point was, you're coming up with words that help you in writing that about her. So you're seeing that come up. And so it kind of guides that, but I think it also guides Fraser's words might be much more interesting. There's a lot of repetition in here. So if you type, I would like for Fraser, you might get a whole different list of words where all of them are different, and it guides you a little bit differently. So their dialogue comes what to are sound like them.
Do you, and I don't know if you have that in front of you, but I'm just curious, do you have Fraser's I would like responses? I'm just curious.
We can. Yeah, I have it right here. So I'm loading up the Fraser keyboard right now.
All right.
Well, we're a limited and, spot, so we have to kind of do things from the side sometimes.
Say that again?
Did you say you do them from the site sometimes?
We have to look this stuff up a little bit more from that far back.
Oh, no, but I mean, I just have the Fraser keyboard in front of me.
Oh, please.
So I'm typing an I. Okay, and then if you type in Fraser, would isn't even one of the first suggestions.
Not. Really?
You get, I don't, I think, I was, I know, I have, I just, I can, I am, I can't, yeah. Didn't, guess, mean, thought. So, and I can add the word because it's still in, it's still there. It's just not one of the 16 most.
But his I words.
So if I do, I would like, okay, yeah. And then, so I have this grid here of word suggestions.
Hi. Oh, okay. Can I see?
Yeah, of course.
So, okay. So, wow, these are all pretty, oops, I don't know what I did.
You broke it.
Did I accidentally... press it.
No. Yeah, here. So,
but his I words are
so
very much.
So you can just tap any word.
Uh huh. So I type, okay. So I'm tapping this and then more words come up.
Yes. So what have you just tapped? Which word did you select?
This. And then
I would like this.
I would like this. Wine, calls, chair, may, good, duties.
Right. So now we're getting deeper into the sentence, right? So I would like, and so now you're getting some nouns. And so wine is like obviously a common Fraser choice. Like it's giving you word selections that are, the deeper you get into the sentence, the more the character is going to reveal itself. So yeah, I would like this. You can choose from any number of selections, but the further you go, I think you're going to find more. You find like more specifics that relate to the character.
Yes.
So if I select wine, I would like this wine and pate with cream. So I can interrupt.
And listeners, just to let you know what we're doing right now is Nat has his phone out and we're using the predictive tool.
Yes.
From Botnik, correct?
botnik.org/apps/writer.
So
if you want to try it yourself.
Yeah, it's fun. I feel like I'm going to download this so that
it's a web app.
Then right? Yep. I'm 30 years old and I'm
download this website.
Still learning technology, everybody. Yeah. But yes, this sounds like a fun way to, I feel like there are endless possibilities here for doing some sort of, I dream of writing some sort of fan fiction. I've spent a lot of time talking about fan fiction on this podcast and have even pitched some shows, including actually my episode that's coming out this coming week is with Joe Keenan, who's the executive producer and writer from Frasier. And he's written some of my favorite episodes. So I pitched him Young Martin, which was my idea for a gritty prequel.
He's a cop? In
this? Yes. Martin's a cop. He's solving crimes with his psychologist wife.
I would watch that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I'm ready for.
So let me pitch you something right now.
Yes.
Using Botnik's technology, one of the things I mentioned earlier, and I know, again, this is there's a lot of details here, but we can combine two voices. Mm-hmm. You know, we recently put out a song that was Morrissey lyrics combined with Amazon reviews of the P90X home DVD workout system.
Oh,
It's called Bored With This Desire To Get Ripped. I highly recommend you check it out. We have a music video online. But yeah, so it turns out to be this like somber Morrissey song about getting a ripped body.
Right.
And
so we could mix Riverdale with Frasier.
Yes. Or
saying.
I was going to say Homicide Life on the Street or NYPD Blue or something. Like if you picked a show that was like, oh, I want to see like this Frasier character, but on this style of procedural. Well, we could take that procedural and combine it with either just the Martin keyboard or, you know, just Martin. And you could also parse. You could be, I want only action that has Martin in it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then create a keyboard of only those action lines. No one else has mentioned in it. And then I want a Martin dialogue keyboard and I'm going to combine those with Homicide Life on the Street or, like I said, The Shield, NYPD Blue, Magnum P.I.
Ooh, Magnum P.I. Wow, the possibilities are truly endless. You know what?
So we will help you with this.
Listeners, I'm curious. We can, if whoever's listening to this when it comes out, I would love to hear from you. Is this something that should happen? I don't know.
And what show should she combine?
Yes.
What's the tone of Young Martin?
What's the tone of Young?
You could pick something very pedantic, like police training guides or something, too. That's what the P90X, they come to class. So you could pick something very ordinary, but with character dialogue, it makes it very funny. So you can actually.
I think what I would want to find, and I think, you know, listeners, you can help me with this. I think I would want to come up. I would never want to try, especially because John Mahoney has passed away. I personally don't want to really see them get together without him. So the only way I could like be okay with it, I feel like, or at least one idea is doing something that's like a prequel with different people.
I'm really dreading. I mean, I think we joked about this a little bit before, but, or maybe that was off mic, but, But as we are recording this, the Murphy Brown reboot is about to come out or has just first aired. I mean, obviously the Roseanne reboot came and fizzled for obvious good reasons. And I mean, that it got canceled. But we are in an era of aggressively rebooting
'90s
sitcoms with the exact same cast. And I'm kind of dreading the day that
they do it to Frasier.
Kelsey Grammer does that interview and says, actually, we're going to do this.
Listen,
especially with John Mahoney having recently passed away. I feel like it wouldn't be the same.
I want something completely different. Like, I guess I am bringing up Riverdale again because at least the first season, quite good because it does not follow the exact same narrative. It's sexy. It's mysterious.
As what, like the Archie comics?
Right. I don't know if you've ever watched it, either one of you, but Riverdale is not what I expected.
It's not the Archie tone at all.
It's got the characters, but there's a darkness. There's a sexiness. Sex. And what would I like? Yeah, maybe
Murder.
Frasier meets gritty, meets sexy. That's right. Gritty, sexy, and Frasier. So I need to figure out which shows I need to mix together in Botnick to get the results that I'm picturing in my head. But I feel like this might be a good note to end on. Amy and Nat, thank you so much for joining me. And
thank you for having us.
I'm very excited to see the both of you end up doing next, whether it be for like a show or, I mean, like, obviously I was combing through Twitter and I found from Botnick, our predictive algorithm, read every issue of TV Guide from 1987 to help us bring you the inside scoop on all the hottest summer hits of 1988. So,
yeah, we predicted what's going to happen on TV in 1988.
Yes. Shows like Cop a Feather, Street Father. There's some really good stuff there. Anyone who's listening, I highly recommend you check out Botnick Studios.
Yeah, we're Botnick Studios on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So.
I'll cut this out, but I'll definitely outro you guys. I don't know if there's anything, Amy, that you want to particularly plug or social media or anything. And same for you, Nat. Amy, is there anything you'd want me to mention?
Well, and I think one of the things that's going on right now, and Nat can speak more to this, but I'm just seeing something in our Slack that we're actually doing this end of music called The Songularity. And he can speak more to that. But I did just see that we're the featured campaign on Kickstarter right now. And we're actually creating.
Yeah, I don't think this episode's going to air in time for the Kickstarter to be.
Yeah, it did pass the Kickstarter thing. But I think that I just think that it's, to me, it's like a privilege to work with this group of people because there are so many, the talent, and just because I think there's something that comes together with that even though this is technology, I still think it takes it down to that base thing of these are people writing and creating. And there's something just really wonderful about that this is a new way of doing what we're doing. I mean, because I think a lot of things.
Yeah, I think that we have a really, I don't know how you feel. I get an enormous degree of imposter syndrome sometimes, even though I don't think anyone's ever made me feel alien or different in the group. But, you know, you look at, you know, for our example, our CEO was the head writer of Clickhole. He also has a degree in neuroscience or neuropsychology, rather, and quit his job as the head writer of Clickhole to co-found this company with Bob Mankoff, who was the longtime cartoons and humor editor at The New Yorker, who is also currently the cartoons and humor editor at Esquire. Our CTO has like multiple, she's I think now getting her PhD. Mm-hmm. She has like multiple graduate degrees in like, I want to say pure mathematics and also neuropsychology. Like they're two of our major developers are work at Pixar. Like the credentials.
I feel everyone's smart.
No, not
okay.
me. That's what I'm saying. No, like everyone else has credentials. I'd have no credentials. Like that's what's amazing to me is, you know, I went to a college that was essentially an expensive summer camp for kids who want to make movies. But, you know, you look at the group of people we're with and it's intimidatingly high quality group of writers.
But very inclusive.
I love it. Even for a dummy like me.
Yeah, no one ever makes me feel that way other than me. that's very important to say. It's just the sheer status of all these people.
I think all writers have that imposter syndrome, but I think that there's an inclusivity there that makes things more creative because you do have all those different viewpoints. And I think coming from those.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. And people come from, like, Pixar has a very specific way of treating creativity among their people. I mean, I remember reading in their philosophy, something that Pixar put out, that they choose to view that their employees should have this sort of unbridled creativity. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we realize that any rule or any structure that we create should be seen as a limit to their creativity. Mm-hmm. And that we choose to operate from that. Not that we can't have rules, but we choose to operate from the point that recognizing that anything we do is limiting our participants. And that's such a fascinating way to work. So when we work with these Pixar guys, they have a totally different angle on the way of creating things. For example, it's really fascinating. And, you know, our CEO came out of Clickhole and The Onion. So he's got a different writing process. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see all these forms of creativity mashed together.
Well, I can't wait to see what you come up with next. Nat, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm Nat Towsen, NatTowsen, to see me. Maybe I'm doing stand-up in your town. Or you can see the things that I write for not only Botnik, but other comedy sources online. And I would say follow Botnik Studios on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Heck yes. I am also following Botnik on Twitter right now. But thank you, Amy and Nat, so much for being here. And until next time, good night, Seattle.